my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. This is episode 385 to be broadcast on March 6, 2024 on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch.
Hi.
If you are watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment. We should be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening right here now on Facebook Live, you can comment on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's Rant of the Week. First of all, apologies to my radio listeners on last week's show. Due to a technical issue, my show was not played last Wednesday on WHUS-FM. You can hear that broadcast, though, on WHUS.org and on all of my other streaming outlets. And that would be Bicycle Talk episode 384, which was on February 29th of 2024. Let's move on to the positive side. That was kind of a rant, kind of not. On a positive side, it was the 60s on Sunday. The 60s, 60 degrees. Now, we're not talking about the 60s, like, you know, muscle cars and, you know, that sort of thing. And tie-dye and you know, hippies and all that. No, it was actually the 60s in weather on Sunday. Wow. It was still very windy for this time of year, but you know, that's the way it is this time of year. You can't dismiss the temperature. Lots of people out on bikes, including the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. That would be you. Yes, it was you. Absolutely. Okay, I know, not cycling, but I live in the basketball capital of the world, and guess what? And truly, it is the basketball capital of the world. Well, you can debate that. That's fine. We can go along with that, but that's what we call it out here. Not cycling, but the UConn Huskies women and men are the Big East in-season champions, both. I was at the game on Sunday. Unfortunately, I missed the 60-degree weather other than walking to the game from my car, but, you know, whatever. I also taught a 90-minute spin class that morning, so I got my exercise in. I just didn't get to play outside as much as I would have liked to. But anyway, I was at the men's game on Sunday, and it was a blast. And I was at the women's game before that. So it's all very, very good. It was all good stuff. So moving on, this is not a basketball podcast. This is a cycling podcast. So we'll move on to other things. And here it is, still on the positive side. Here come the classics. It was a big weekend in Europe with the Strada Bianca and the Paris-Nice. So did you see any of these, or were you too busy out riding your bicycle because it was beautiful weather? Yeah, could be. Maybe it's not beautiful weather where you are. If you're in the Sierras in California, not so good, huh? 12 feet of snow. That's a heck of a snowstorm. Anyway, probably not conducive to good bicycle riding, but great for cross-country skiing. Anyway, yeah, they're having some weather out there. They're having the weather that we sort of kind of used to have, but we don't seem to have that here anymore. Now we just have warm weather, and I'm looking at, if things keep going this way, finding that my 300 feet above sea level is going to be beachfront property sometime soon, the way things are going. But Fran just growled in the other room on that one. So anyway, the classics. We got some things to talk about. There's all sorts of stuff going on. And I also have some stuff that I missed on last week because I completely ran out of time. But you know me, I'm rambling Ron here. I tend to start talking and then get myself into an area and then get, well, anyway. Mechanical Minute and Cycling Tips. Okay, I have a comment from last week's show that you can listen to on podcast. Ed says, the brake hood's turned in thing isn't just about aerodynamics. I had made a comment about what people were seeing at the classics in the pit areas. So they were talking about how a lot of the brake levers were pitched in on the bikes. And I thought it was about aerodynamics, but Ed says to me, Ed Sassler wrote in and he said, the brake hood's turned in thing isn't just about aerodynamics. Radial nerve impingement can cause fingers to tingle or go numb. One of the impingement points is at the elbow, giving the forearm varus, rotating it inward toward the center line, can ease that. So that's a big shout out and many thanks to Ed for picking that up and sending that in to me. I really do appreciate that. Great information, Ed.
That's kind of like sciatica of the arm.
Is this something that we all need to looking at this on our bikes? That's a thought. It is definitely a thought. I might just try it just to see, you know, how it feels and see if there's any difference there. I don't generally have too much trouble with tingling fingers and all, but I know a lot of people that do. I know a lot of people that have problems with tingling fingers. They have problems with neck pain and upper back tightness between the shoulder blades. And I have mostly found the cure for that to be the saddle. I know. Doesn't make sense, right? How come the front end of my body, the whole top end of my body hurts so much and now you're telling me it's my seat? Well, seat position can do a lot for you. So that is another tip that I like to pass on to people. If you're not sitting on your saddle, which is what it is for, your sits bones should be on the saddle, and you're sliding forward on that saddle, then what you're probably doing is you're pushing yourself back the entire time, which will lead to lots of neck and shoulder pain. And I know I've repeated this 1,000 times on this show, but you know, every time I look at another person's bike, I go, how do you ride that thing like that? I mean, don't you have neck and shoulder pain? A lot of people go, no, I like it this way. I don't want it pitched up too much because it hurts me in other places, which there are sensitive other places, and I do understand that, but it is it's a concern. It's definitely a concern. I see some people with their saddles pitched down so low that the nose is going down so low. I just don't understand how they can stay on the bike. I don't get it, but you know what? Everybody's got their thing, and that's the way it is, and that's we're all individuals. And by the way, did I happen to mention the positive effects of a good bike fitting? Anyway. Moving on, as we are into Mechanical Minute and cycling tips, they're not ready for you. How to reintroduce yourself to cars and trucks that were given a break from sharing the road with you all winter long. And I got a couple little clips here for you to talk about this. Remember, when we first get out on the road again on our bikes, we are now foreigners in a somewhat hostile land, because people who are driving cars and trucks all winter long, they're not used to seeing cyclists on the road unless they're in a very heavy urban area where there are a number of people that are using their bikes to commute with. But you get out here in the rural backwoods of northeastern Connecticut, and they haven't seen you in a long time because you've been in pedal and run spin class all winter long, or you've been hunkered down inside your house and had the clicker in your hand and you're working on some serious couch potato or whatever it may be. But once you get back out on the road again, you got to be aware of the fact that, guess what? You know, there's still cars and trucks out there, and we have to be aware of that. The other thing that a lot of people do, and I forewarn people about this all the time in my classes, is that if you have been on a stationary product all winter long, riding your bicycle, quote unquote, either it being your bicycle or it being a mechanism that resembles a bicycle, that is a very, very, very stable piece of equipment. And because it is so stable, we tend to develop some bad habits on it. And if you develop bad habit, like really thrashing on that to get a hard workout, which I do not recommend, by the way, I recommend that you keep that you really use your indoor cycle to develop and you know, be cautious of your position on the bike, and also to be able to maybe even develop your spin and a little lighter pressure on the pedal to get the wattage you're looking for. It's okay to get high wattage at high RPMs. It's not okay to get that high wattage if you're really grinding and pushing on the bike. Why am I bringing this up? Because when you go back outside, okay, and you get on your bike that has two wheels on it that wiggles back and forth on the road, if you are not super smooth on that bike, if you have not been a roller rider in the wintertime and have been a stationary bicycle rider all the time, you tend to be a little weavy on the road. You tend to be a little unpredictable. And the more unpredictable you are on the road to cars, the more cars will not like you. So ride straight, ride right, ride comfortable, ride flexible, so that you can ride a straight line. Because a straight line is always the right answer. It really makes a huge difference when you're riding down the road. Even if you see a pothole in front of you, which there are many of them now because it was winter. It is winter. I guess it still is winter. The local greenhouse has not put up their 2 weeks till spring sign yet, but it'll probably pop up in a couple of days. But anyway, the roads just get beat over the wintertime if you're in the snow belts of the United States. So we get a lot of potholes. We get a lot of road damage in general. And there's also a lot of gravel wash that washes out onto the roads. The roads are pretty messy this time of year. So remember, as you're riding down the road and you're seeing something like that coming up, the move is not to make an abrupt movement when you get to the hazard in the road, but to make a very slow and deliberate and well-defined movement out and around that particular problem, and then the same thing back in. So you look like you're really like a machine making a move back and forth on the road, instead of the we're gonna use the term herky jerky stupid cyclist. So we don't want to be a herky jerky stupid cyclist. We want to make it look like we know what we're doing when we're out on the road, because don't we know what we're doing when we're out on the road? Be a good thing here. So anyway, I got a few a few things in here, including from, get this, driversed.com. Yes, there is a driversed.com. And that one of the comments here, and I'll bring up some other comments here too, is before passing a cyclist in a narrow traffic lane, wait until the traffic is clear on the opposite lane. Ha! How many people do that? And then change lanes to pass the cyclist. Do not attempt to squeeze past the cyclist. What is it called, Fran?
What?
D-U-H. Yes, yeah. This is a D-U-H moment. Every bicycle... okay, to pass... Do not attempt to squeeze past the cyclist. Every bicyclist should always wear an ANSI-approved bicycle helmet when riding, which greatly improves the chances of surviving a collision. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, it seems like a simple thing and it seems like common sense, but, you know, there we are. So I have another one here from the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. Tips for bicyclists and pedestrians. So this particular group is this. These are the big rigs. These are the big trucks. Okay, and it has here as a description: bicyclists and pedestrians experience unique safety challenges. They lack protection in a crash, travel slower than motor vehicles, and are hard for drivers to see, particularly by truck and bus drivers. The following tips will help bicyclists and pedestrians make a plan for sharing our roads safely. Avoid lingering in blind spots. Large vehicles, big trucks, have huge blind spots, making it difficult for drivers to see bicyclists and pedestrians. Avoid riding or walking behind a truck or bus that is backing up. This is kind of no-brainer stuff. But anyway, drivers often cannot see directly behind their vehicle. Now there's cameras, so it's a little better than it used to be, I will say. But anyway, prepare for wide turns. This is the famous one right here. Trucks and buses don't maneuver as easily as smaller vehicles and need to make wide, careful turns. I'm gonna classify the SUV and large pickup truck into this one too. By the way, they have a huge blind spot. Anyway, if a large vehicle is stopped at an intersection or about to turn right, wait for them to turn before continuing your journey and step back from the curb to be safe. And if you're on a bicycle, for instance, don't go off to the side of that vehicle. Don't do it. Get behind them. Get in the lane of travel and don't play the game of life and death by getting to the side of someone. They can't see you. They won't see you. They will cut the corner as tight as they can and you will be there and the rest is not a good thing. So, be aware of long stopping distances. Yeah, large trucks and buses need a length of up to 2 football fields to safely stop. Bicyclists should avoid merging closely in front of a moving truck or bus. Again, yet another no-brainer, but yeah, it makes sense, doesn't it? Fran and I had a great little incident one day. We're out riding our bikes. We came to an intersection, and we merged out into the lane because we wanted to, and it was a red light that was in front of us, and we merged out into the lane because we wanted to position ourselves properly to cross the road after the traffic light turned. And we had a woman pulling a large horse trailer with a very large pickup truck scream and yell at us for being in her way and saying, "Hey, you know, I can't stop that quickly." Well, it's a red light, you idiot. You see the red light? That's why you're supposed to be slowing down earlier. But because we are on bicycles, she felt it was in her place to criticize us for the way that we were behaving. Now, if we were a car, she would never have had that conversation. I rest my case. Moving on. Make yourself visible. In the daylight, in the daytime, bright clothing is always best for visibility. At night, in bad weather, reflective clothing, use reflectors on your bike. This is no-brainer stuff. We all know this. We're experienced cyclists, right? Those of us who are listening to this. Or maybe we're about to become an experienced cyclist because we're getting all sorts of great information here on Bicycle Talk. That's a good thing. Obey traffic laws, signals, and signs. But of course, you're a vehicle, okay? You are a vehicle. You will always be a vehicle. You have 2 wheels. You're a vehicle. That's the way it works. You do the same thing that those in vehicles do, hopefully maybe even better than they do, because I see people not driving real well these days. But that's another story. Stay alert and undistracted. Using headphones can leave a bicyclist or pedestrian unable to hear sirens, horns, or other warnings. Yeah, don't ride with headphones, please, please, please. Stop walking while actively using a device. Let's say 90% of the people who use devices, and I'm just reaching out here. I'm making a generalization. I would say that 90% of the people that are using devices while they are walking are not paying attention. As are 90% of the people that are driving their motorized vehicles not paying attention. The problem isn't in the person who's in the vehicle or on the bicycle or as on their feet as a pedestrian. The problem is the device. The device is a problem. Put the device away. You're going for a walk, put the device away. You're walking for transportation, put the device away. If the device goes buzz, buzz because you have something coming in, stop, look at the device, and then start up again. But you know, you want to see the most incredible abuse of device distraction, you need to go to a college campus. It's incredible. The kids on college campuses do not look at where they're going. And I think that sometime in the near future, we are going to have a lot of chiropractic issues with our necks being folded over because people are always looking down, not at where
were
they're
you
going.
Just talking about radial neuropathy?
Maybe I'm talking about radial neuropathy. What, maybe, Fran, if you come over here next to the microphone, you can tell us a little bit more about radial neuropathy.
Sure.
See that? See
so
that?
Were you talking about it?
I'm talking about people using devices.
No, I know.
And not looking at where they're going.
You said neck problems because of it.
Yes, absolutely.
Were you talking about radial neuropathy? You were talking about arm numbness before.
Oh, with the bicycle and with the handle, with the position of the brake levers. Yes.
Yes. Well, that's it's brachial plexus neuropathy. So
okay.
You have a nerve. You have nerves that arise from your cervical spine that go down your arm.
Okay.
And the nerves are my mother's usually always right. Thank you, Dr.
Okay.
Pitchford. So that's the musculocutaneous, median, ulnar, axillary, and radial. So
okay.
And all of those, that's the brachial plexus, and all of those nerves arise from your neck. So if you are improperly positioned on your bike,
right,
you can compromise the brachial plexus. So you can get nerve pain, nerve issues anyway. So tell me where you were talking about the nerve pain happening.
I don't have the nerve pain. I was just making an observation. That's all
I
was doing.
But that's a thing that can
but
happen.
But I got a response from a listener who was explaining to me what it was that was going on that was making people turn their brake levers in.
Yeah.
On their bikes.
So they're getting some
right.
kind of some kind
people
of
people have numbness of fingers.
Yes.
What,
so
yeah.
numbness of fingers. So
yeah.
the median nerve innervates the first three fingers, the thumb, the first finger, and the second finger, and then the ulnar nerve innervates the ring finger and the pinky.
Right.
So you can get neuropathy from that, from you know, because they all branch out and come down. So if mm-hmm. you and you can get
Tech neck, right.
Tech
neck is the cell phone, right?
Right. It could be the cell phone. It could also be your that your computer monitor is not set up ergonomically.
Right.
So if you're walking and you're looking down at your phone, or
right.
you're sitting and you're looking down at your phone, you can absolutely put your neck into a position that compromises your brachial plexus, and then you can get all kinds of neck pain and nerve issues all down your arm.
Not to mention, you can't see where you're going.
Well, then there's that.
And you step out in front of a motorized vehicle or a pedal-powered vehicle in the process, and everybody ends up at a pile.
Then you have a lot more problems than neck pain.
Then you have more problems than neck pain.
Yeah.
It's all true.
Yeah.
So stay alert and undistracted is the theme here. That's
yeah.
the whole idea. And avoid riding and walking impaired. Well, duh. Avoid driving a car impaired. Avoid a lot of things impaired. Maybe you should just sit still when you're impaired. Maybe you shouldn't be impaired. I don't know, but this seems like pretty basic information. This came from the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. I thought it was amusing, and I thought I would bring it up because it definitely is an issue for some. And anyway, let's move on into the show a little bit further. And as we go in, for more interesting bike equipment information, just when we thought time trial helmets couldn't get any weirder.
Yeah, I saw that.
Oh,
that was
my
weird.
God. Giro leaves us speechless. All right. So this came.
Yeah, I saw that.
I'm looking at this picture right now. If you don't get a chance, you got to take a look. This comes from cyclingnews.com, and it is it's hysterical because there's a picture of one of the new Visma time trial helmets that's out there, and it sort of looks like you're wearing the time trial helmet backwards and forwards at the same time. It looks like you have a football on your head.
A
the front of the football has a shield on it,
of
which
course.
Covers over your eyes and protects you in that way, and also obviously aerodynamics you in that process. And then the back has the long droop in the back, too. It is the, by far, most ridiculous thing I have ever seen on a cyclist's head.
I saw a post where somebody put that side by side with a picture of Eddie Merckx with a backward cycling cap on, and the comment was, the caption was, sometimes I long for the days when everybody just wore cycling caps.
Right, right.
Next to this guy.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's great. That's awesome.
And it was Eddie Merckx.
And you know what the amazing thing is Eddie Merckx could make anything go fast.
Yeah.
Without the extra equipment,
right.
He did have a custom-made Chino Cinelli bicycle that he used when he broke the world record in Mexico City on the track. And but guess what? He held that record for a long time on the track, and it took a long time for somebody to finally break through with it. And nobody would, you know. Nobody wore special equipment back then. They just rode their bikes really fast. And, you know, whatever. Anyway, so in the world of time trial helmets, things have been getting weird for a couple of years now. But as of today, you can forget the Specialized TTs and its accompanying head sock. And you can forget the Sweet Protection Redeemer 2V1, which broke cover with Uno X last season. They both had a reputation for looking a bit, well, mad. But thanks to Giro, there's now a whole nother league. And there is. There's a whole other league here. At the start of... I can't believe I said that. Seth McFarlane would be very angry with me. Anyway, at the start of the Torino Adriatico, the Giro sponsor Vismo Lease a Team that unveiled the brand's latest model, complete with an enormous visor, massive protruding leading edge, and wide wings at the rear. And it is truly a bizarre looking piece of equipment. But, you know, whatever you got to do to go fast, get ready, because this year at the Giro, they are going to be unleashing these things, and you're going to see a lot more of this in the Pelotons coming. It won't be in the Peloton, but you'll see a lot of more of these in time trials as we go on. And you know, I look at this thing, and as I look at it, I get it. I totally get it, because the way it shrouds out over your shoulders, it certainly eliminates that upper body, you know, wind jamming physique that we have that will slow you down in a stiff breeze. And if you're able to hold the proper position, this is amazing. I'm sure it works really, really good, but it truly does look ridiculous. And you know, so we'll put it in there with possibly one of the ugliest things I've ever seen on a bicycle. And I've seen a lot of ugly things on bicycles, but that's beside the point. As a matter of fact, if you want to get a vision of interesting and ugly things on bicycles, you need to sign yourself up for the Five Borough Bicycle Tour in New York City, because I'm telling you, there are things that come out of the woodwork that ride in that I guarantee you will not have experienced before. Everybody who's anybody who's not anybody rides in that, and it can be very, very entertaining. It is very entertaining. I will give it that. I did it once, and that is a checkbox, and I will probably not do it again, because riding with 30,000 people who don't know how to ride their bikes is not particularly one of those things I really enjoy doing, but it is something everyone should do at least once. Fran did it.
I did it.
That's what got her hooked into. That's what got Fran hooked into cycling.
Yes.
You know, she did the Five Borough Tour, and then after that, it was like, oh, what else can I do?
Yep.
And off she went. So you know, it does have a way of recruiting people into the sport. So we give it a thumbs up on that. But
it's
boy,
really an amazing festive thing.
It is an amazing festive thing, but the weirdest of the weird comes out when you go to that. It definitely, I saw people with apples on top of their helmets. You know, it's a big apple. Got it?
Right.
Clever. Cute. Anyway, so this time trial helmet, though, I would put money on the fact that someone will be at the Five Borough Tour with this helmet on. Now, you're not supposed to be able to go over 12 miles an hour or maybe 15 miles an hour. As a matter of fact, my good friend Pat Bowe used to, he was with the U.S. Army cycling team, and they used to get in the front of the Five Borough Tour and control the pace. For anybody who wanted to push the pace, they kept them back, and which is a difficult thing at best. You know, it's not easy to do that sort of thing. But anyway, that's what they did. So yeah, it's ugly. It looks really weird. I'm sure it's way faster. It definitely, I mean, as you see it in action and the way it covers over and it actually broadens out to the shoulders, it's got to work. There's no question that it has to work. It definitely works. But, you know, the human body will still be the biggest detriment to going fast on a bicycle because, you know, we're big and broad on the top end. And so, therefore, if you don't get the right position, then you're going to be a little slower or you're going to be working a little bit harder. And that's the other thing, too. What is it? What's the magic number? I think it's 18 miles an hour. Once you get to 18 miles an hour, it's all about position. Think about that one. I'll leave that one out there for anyone to comment on in the show. So anyway, kind of funny, kind of cool. You got to check out the new time trial helmets from Giro. They're hysterically funny. And now I move on to the next item on my list. And the next item on my list, if you were concerned in any way of Thomas de Gendt's blowout at the UAE Tour about a week or so ago, yeah, here we go. Clinch your tires, blowing out. My favorite subject of all times. Zip releases a statement on hookless rims followed by Tom de Gendt's UAE crash. Impact with an object to blame rather than tire and rim system, according to the American brand Zip. Following on a recent series of statements from involved parties in the wake of Thomas de Gendt's tire blowout in the UAE Tour, Zip has made its position public. For readers joining this story at this point, it's rumbled on in the last week or so, so it relates to the fact that there's speculation that de Gendt's tire and rim combination, a Zip 353 NSW rim alongside a 28mm Vittoria Corsa Pro tire, nice tire, was to blame for his crash and could potentially cast doubt on the safety of hookless rims. While there was speculation from the fact that the rim was too narrow, Vittoria has already stated publicly that an impact with a rock was to blame. Yeah, here we go. Well, that happens. The UCI, however, was not satisfied. Of course they weren't, because they're the UCI. They like your socks to be the right height. They're a pain in the butt. Don't even get me started. However, they weren't satisfied with that explanation, so they're investigating the matter with urgency. Does the UCI have anything better to do? Zip has joined the fray and they're sticking to the same line of reasoning as Vittoria, namely that a frontal impact was to blame and, importantly, one that would exceed the limits of any rim and tire combination. True, but we're going to go down that slippery slope here in a minute, and my opinion's going to come out, but we'll move forward. Zip, this is quoted from them, does extensive testing both to existing industry-ratified standards as well as our own protocols based on over 30 years of designing the fastest wheels on the planet, the brand claimed in a written statement. Try 32C tires. Excuse me. These tests include both traditional impact tests for the rim as well as retention tests for specific tire and rim combinations. Zip highlighted the scrutiny in places on their hookless design, which goes beyond the ISO and ETRO specifications. Specific tire retention and hookless rims are intention protocols subject to the tire rim combination of pressures as well beyond any published standard. La 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 la. They've worked with other tire and wheel manufacturers to make their standards and on and on and on. So, anyway, where does Ron's opinion come in? Well, here it is. You're listening to Bicycle Talk. I have opinions. I totally do. Stupid tubeless tires. I'll say it again, loud and clear, so that all you guys out there that have always sent me back all these comments about how much you love your tubeless tires and how wonderful they are. And I understand you have a love for them. I get it. I get that all of that. They belong on mountain bikes, not on road bikes. I said it again. Tubeless tires, once they hit something to the point where it is going to fracture the rim and or create such a devastating hit, they literally explode off the rims. Tubular tires do not. All right? Said it, been there, done that. Tires with tubes in them will rapidly deflate, but they will stay on the rim. That's it. I said it. I'm done. You got an opinion? Let me know about it. Dying to hear it. I'm not a big fan of tubeless tires on road bikes, especially in racing situations. Let's go back to tubulars. I know it's old school, but they work. They really do work. And if you get a flat on a tubular tire, you can still ride on it. That's why all the cyclocross guys do that. Anyway, moving on. Goodbye, Zip. You're going away. What's next on my screen here? Oh, God. It's just such a strange world we live in sometimes with this all this stuff. So let's talk a little bit more about some other things. Let's switch gears here just for a moment. Do I still have time here to switch gears? Oh, I got lots of time. Okay. So in an election year deal, the automakers and with automakers and unions, the Biden administration is backing off on ambitious plans to encourage electric vehicle production, according to the New York Times. This came from Streets Blog. So, you know, is this the right direction? Is it the wrong direction? You know, we're trying to be environmentally cool here. We're not always so environmentally cool. I'll get to a point here that will be bicycle related, just so you know. So the Biden administration is backing off on EPA rules that require automakers to sharply curtail tailpipe emissions, making cyclists being able to breathe better, and instead let them roll out electric vehicles more slowly through 2030. An analysis of federal data found out that when drivers pause at an intersection, they're 47% less likely to hit a pedestrian. I talked about this on the show about a week ago, I think. A Seattle resident who walks 5 miles a day asks, why do pedestrians have to bear the brunt of keeping themselves safe? Yeah, there we are. The publisher of Bike Portland says the city has failed to address the crisis of unsafe streets despite being well aware of the dangers. Walking in Los Angeles, and this one I definitely covered last week, is so dangerous that more pedestrians were killed last year on Vermont Avenue in the entire state of Vermont than in the entire state of Vermont. The advocates of a measure for Measure HLA are using the fact to urge voters to force the city to build better infrastructure. Seattle advocates are pushing for an 8-year, $3 billion transportation levy to add new bus and bike lanes, fill in sidewalk gaps, and make other upgrades. There's a $317 million federal grant that will help Southeastern Pennsylvania Transportation Authority replace aging rail cars. The head of Boston Chamber of Commerce, a former MBTA official, is skeptical of the new taxes to fund the transit agency. And Austin is applying for federal funding to close its busiest transit corridor, Guadalupe Street, to cars. Yay, Austin! Keep it weird, Austin. We like you a lot. The bike group Propel ATL is pushing for a two-way cycle track on a harrowing 5-lane Memorial Drive, and that is from Atlanta. And Pittsburgh Regional Transit is simplifying its fare system. And looking for a folding bike? Momentum Mag has 6 new recommendations. Yeah. Well, enough of that. So, backing off on the EPA rules to not put as many electric vehicles on the road. First of all, from an environmental standpoint, we know what the story is there. From I really, really, really like breathing oxygen standpoint, and I do a lot of that when I'm riding my bike. Get a clue, folks. We're killing ourselves. Why are we doing this? We need to not be backing off on these standards. This is obviously run by the auto and petroleum industry. Of course, I'm a huge fan of both of them, right? You do know I grew up in a garage, right? I grew up in a garage where we fixed cars and did that sort of thing. My dad was a mechanic. But, you know, I've evolved. I've evolved to a certain level here. And there's a better answer out here. The real answer, the correct answer, is better places to ride bicycles safely, because this is Bicycle Talk. This is what we talk about. It's all there. So let's go on to the next thing that's on my list here. And get this. Letting bikes talk to cars can save lives. This is another one of those big DUHs. I think that I had talked about this a few years ago even, about how, you know what we need? We need a better communication system between these modern cars and trucks and the bicycles. If we had a device that we could rely on, and since then, there are devices out there, but if we had a device that we could rely on that would ensure the fact that the car knew we were there, that would be super helpful. So a lot more of the cars are coming through with pedestrian and cyclist warnings, which is good. That's a good start. But again, we on the bicycles don't really know what's going on there unless we use, Garmin makes a great little tail light which has a radar on it. I have talked about it endlessly on the show. I think it's a great unit. I think that, boy, if somebody could just figure out a way just keep the prices coming down on that, because they aren't inexpensive. But boy, having a radar on my bike is a game changer. It has completely changed the way I ride my bike in traffic, and or not even in traffic. If I'm riding around on my back roads out here in northeastern Connecticut, where, you know, life is wonderful, little opinion there, I can literally ride my bicycle in the middle of the road on a back road without any fear or danger of anyone sneaking up behind me, because I hear it and see it on my computer almost before I can see them in my rearview mirror. They're great. It's a wonderful idea. But anyway, so there's a lot of talk about vehicle-to-everything technology, and it can make driving better. And cycling, too. Hello. Yeah. So this is... what we have, all this great electronics. We have cell phones that a lot of people ride with. A lot of people are using them all the time. And then we have cars, which can be plugged into, or cell phones can be plugged into. So we have the devices in place to make the communication. We've got Bluetooth. We've got an ability to as you get closer and closer to a vehicle, to be able to communicate with that vehicle. And yet we don't really yet have a good, solid way of we, the cyclists, knowing that there is a car that is about to run us over, other than that Garmin radar, which works exceptionally well, by the way. And then I have this old-fashioned thing that I use on my bike, and this one goes back a few years, and sorry if I'm an old-school guy, but guess what? The mirror works really good. You can see a lot with the mirror. You can definitely get a much better picture about how big that vehicle is that's about to run you over if you have a mirror on your bike. But if you don't have the mirror on your bike, you're stuck with doing the old turn to the left, look over your shoulder, and at that point, it may be too late. So mirrors, I know they're geeky. I know they're weird. I know I was a bike racer. I know I wear tight Lycra. And, you know, putting things like that on my bike are just not cool. But you know what? I don't care. I like being alive, because alive is cooler than being dead. So that's, or at least that's the part. I know the alive part. I don't know the dead part, and I don't want to know the dead part. So anyway, we move forward. So this is a thing that vehicle-to-vehicle communication is key. It is absolutely key. We need a lot more of it, and we need to have a way to stay safer on our pedal vehicles, because it seems like all the safety and the design and everything, it's all going into the motorized vehicles because that's where the money is. But you know what? We need it on our bikes too. So somebody out there, who's like really enterprising and come up with an idea of being able to help us on our bikes, it would be super helpful. We could use it, you know, as much as the cars and trucks need it. I mean, I'm looking right now, I've got a car that's coming to the end of its lease, and I'm looking at other cars, and you know, and pretty much everything out there now, not everything, but a lot of the vehicles out there right now do have sensors which warn you of pedestrians and cyclists. That's a big move in the right direction. Sort of like seatbelts was a big move in the right direction. You know, sort of like anti-lock brakes was a big move in the right direction. You know, these are all good things for sure. I just had like fireworks go on my screen. That was a little weird.
You did?
Yeah, that was really strange. I never saw that before.
Like a graphic of fireworks?
Like, yeah, bursting behind me. That was very interesting. I don't know.
Maybe it's a special day on Google.
I have no idea. I'm on Facebook Live. Anyway, of course, none of this technology replaces the need for separate bike lanes, okay? And no cyclist should be blamed for a crash because they don't have a vehicle-to-vehicle enabled bike that can talk to a vehicle to a vehicle-enabled driver. But we also see that many cities around the world are investing too slowly and too little building bike infrastructure, or simply painting sharrows in the road, which my friend Tony calls the toilet paper of bicycle safety, with highly debatable benefits, right? That's why it's assume that is the toilet paper of bicycle safety. Sharrows are great until no one looks at them or understands how they work. My favorite conversation is having a conversation with a motorized vehicle driver or operator, we'll call them. I don't know if I'd even call them drivers, but operator that says, you know, you're supposed to be sharing the road. Yeah, I am sharing the road. I'm on the road with you, and we are sharing the road together. Instead, the driver of the motorized vehicle assumes that those sharrows with the bicycles and the pictures and the signs on the side of the road are put there to tell the cyclist to get the hell off the road and get out of the way. And it's like, God, education. You know, ignorance is curable. Stupidity is unfortunate. I've said it more than once. Okay, let's move on. That was a fun little subject. So, yeah, vehicle-to-vehicle communication. Great idea. Expensive idea. Great idea. But anyway, I got room now to talk a little bit about some bicycle racing that happened over the last few weeks. And it is the beginning of the cycling season, and things are starting to happen out there as far as on the world stage. And last weekend season, this is not last weekend, the weekend before, we had the Umlaut hit Nutsblad, and Jan Trotnik makes it 3 wins in a row for Visma Leasebike. Visma Leasebike is just kicking butt right now. They've got a lot of stuff going on. Wout van Aert wins a 3-up sprint to claim a victory at the Keurn-Brussel-Keurn debut. And, you know, there we are. That's Leasebike. They are the Visma Leasebike. You know, you knew them as Jumbo Visma in the past. You knew them as Bianchi Jumbo in the past. Anyway, it's a killer team. They're doing all the good work. They're recruiting all the right people, and things are happening. So let's move on to this past weekend in the Strada Bianca, and which is also one of the major classics of the opening season in the women's division. Lotte Kopecky She quotes here, "It was my turn to go. Capecchi attacks before her rivals to win the Strada Bianca." So the Strada Bianca at near the end has a gravel section, which is pretty intense. And Lottie put the hammer down. Now, Lottie is a cyclocross rider, so it's kind of like her territory. And she is also the world champion, so she just went for it. And she avoids a repeat of the 2023 race. And also raced the previous day where she had to go with an all-out sprint and that wasn't as successful. So she jumped early and it paid off for her. And that brings me to segue to the men's race. And speaking of going at the right time, Tadej Pogačar stuns the field with an 81-kilometer solo attack. Really? So, I have to comment on this because 81 kilometers to go and Tadej Pogačar says, "I can do this." Who can do that? Who can do that? And I'll fill you in on a little bit more detail here in just a minute. But the comment from Tom Pidcock was the best. It was what the, you know what, F. Tom Pidcock stunned and Matthew Vanderpoel scared after Tadej Pogačar left dead bodies everywhere with a stunning Strade Bianca attack.
Not literally,
but it felt like we were, this is a great quote. It felt like we were in the Gruppetto. Now, you know what the Gruppetto is? Gruppetto is the guys in the very, very back of a Grand Tour that are dying to stay up to the point where they don't get eliminated from the race so they can go sprinting when it's sprint time. So, anyway, he says, "I felt like we were in the Gruppetto." The 2023 champion said after Pogačar's jaw-dropping solo raid, as Matthew Vanderpoel jokingly admits on Instagram that he is quote-unquote scared of the Slovenian's dominance. Yeah, how about that? So, how dominant was he? Okay, we already talked about the 81-kilometer solo attack. We didn't talk about the 4-plus minutes he put on them all by himself. And it wasn't like the chasing field was a bunch of hacks who didn't know how to race a bike. It was, you know, the who's who of the pro peloton. And he put 4 minutes on them. 4 minutes. That's a lot of time. That's a whole lot of time. So anyway, are we up for some entertainment this year with Tadej Pogačar and others that are in the pro peloton that are looking like amazing on their bicycles? You know, it could be an interesting year. It could be a really interesting year. And what's with Matthew Vanderpoel? I mean, the guy is, he is switching gears, he says, to being, to this year, away from his cyclocross, which he, of course, won the world championship, so that's not really switching gears, but he wants to win more classics. That's his plan. And if he does what I've seen him do in previous years, I mean, it's insane. I saw him win the Tour de Flanders a couple of years ago on the cobbles on a 20%+ climb on the cobbles with members of the peloton looking back and forth at each other like they were, like, in shock to see him pull away. I checked his Strava because, you know, you can do this now. You can check and see what their Strava numbers were. He was putting out somewhere between 15 and 1600 watts on a 20-plus kilometer climb, and no one could attach to him. He was gone. That was it. He just disappeared and won the race. We have a lot of good entertaining bike racing coming up. If you're a fan of bicycle racing, this is a good year to watch bike racing. Last year was a great year to watch bike racing. All the races are getting faster. I have a theory to that because all the climbs are getting steeper because they're trying to figure out a way to level the playing field, so to speak. So they put steeper climbs in, level, steeper. Anyway, weird. But the gearing on the bikes is just it is set up for climbers. It is set up for these guys who can process oxygen at a way higher rate than others to be able to just spin themselves up and over some of these climbs. You know, if you're riding a 42 or 44 tooth rear ring in the back, you can and you can turn it at 90 to 110 RPMs, you got something. I can't breathe that hard. I, you know, but I'm an old guy, and I used to be able to climb, but those were years ago. But anyway, it is entertaining. It's a lot of fun to watch, and I'm really, really enjoying it. It's been a good year on the bike racing circuit already, and we haven't even started yet. So, I am gonna make a quick comment on a sad note here. Racer and industry innovator Tim Rutledge has passed away. He was a longtime product manager and legendary cyclocross and road racer. He died a couple of Mondays ago after a battle with cancer. Friends and family confirmed this to Bicycle Retail and Industry News on a couple of weeks ago. He was 65 years of age. That's really sad. I watched Tim Rutledge win a national cyclocross championship. I believe it was in Plymouth, Massachusetts. So, you know, it is sad to see that. He went on to work for Redline and developed an entire line of affordable cyclocross bikes. So, anyway. A little note. We got to move on. It's time for our results page here and event page here, I should say. The Frozen Four Training Series. Guess what? They had their first event this past weekend. Yeah, it's a training series in Farmington, Connecticut. They had 292 people pre-register for that event. So bike racing is on and happening. Lots of really cool stuff on Facebook right now. I saw some photos from the Farmington CCAP group, and we're off. It's time. In addition to that, the Philly Bike Show is coming up on March 16th through the 17th, and it's a great consumer trade show. And you get to see a lot of cool stuff. It'll be at the Pennsylvania Convention Center. People for Bikes Leadership Conference is coming up in Tucson, Arizona, March 26th through the 29th, presented by People for Bikes. And then we move on to our local event here coming up, and that will be the Natchog Epic, put on by Domestique Events. The 2024 edition of the Epic is on Sunday, March 24th, and it's at the Thompson Speedway. Yeah, registration is open. You need to pre-register on Bike Reg on that one. Right now, I checked the registration once again, and as I do every week, total event registrations last week was 619. They're up to 670, and there is an 850 cutoff. By the way, the 82-mile men's Epic is currently sold out with a waiting list, just so you know. So this is a gravel ride in northeastern Connecticut, the most beautiful place to ever ride a bicycle in the world. And the weather could be anything. And it's pre-register, no money back. That's the way it works. So that you know, there are still 60-mile rides, 45-mile rides, and 32-mile rides. And if you are a woman, you can still do the 82-mile ride because they still have slots open there. Just so you know, check it out at bikereg.com. On Wednesday, May 15th, rain or shine, is the 7 p.m. sharp on the rollout, and this is the Ride of Silence right here in Storrs, Mansfield, Connecticut, at the Town Hall and Community Center. Overflow parking will be next door at E.O. Smith High School in the parking lot, and all cyclists are welcome. A 3.5-mile loop through the Yukon campus, escorted and monitored by the Yukon Police Department. Maximum speed is 10 to 12 miles per hour. Helmets are required, kid friendly. Finishing points. It's warming up. More warming trend this week with some rain to help wash away the roads. The Strade Bianche win of over 4 minutes. Really? What a rear racing we have in front of us. Still a little soft on the trails to ride without creating some damage, so be aware. Remember, cycling makes you happy and is good for you. Well, duh, I could have told you that. Go Huskies. I know, it's basketball. I squeezed it in. And oh, I do love those listener comments. Please keep them coming. So, 2024, more miles, ride and commute to work, around town, better fitness, or simply enjoying bicycle rides you take by slowing down more and smelling the roses. I'll say it again, it won't be my last time. Get loud, get active, stop complaining about dangerous roads, price of gas, lack of places to safely ride your bike, and join the revolution of change. Hey! Take a day and park the car or truck and ride your bicycle instead and see what you can do with that. You might just surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk, whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on the Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Get on your bikes and ride!